I'm Tony Hendra.
And I'm Jeff Kreisler.
And this is the Final Edition Radio Hour.
30 minutes of sizzling satire with teeth.
American football, 1982.
Wow, Craig Morton got hit hard on that one, and he is not getting up.
Yeah, well, fortunately, it's just a concussion, which means no long-term harm.
That's right. They say concussions are good for you.
Good old repeated blows to the head. You know, they improve memory, motor skills, and cognitive function.
That Craig Morton is a lucky, lucky man.
And a lesson to all you kids out there, you can't play football if you do drugs.
American football, 2015.
And Tom Brady looks a little disoriented after that last play.
Oh, man, that could be a concussion, and well, we all know what that means.
Well, according to the new rules, Roger Goodell, commissioner of the National Football League, will come out onto the field and explain why the NFL is not liable.
By the terms of a class action settlement, the NFL has immunity from any future concussion lawsuits and does not admit to any wrongdoing.
And the crowd goes wild.
American football, 2047.
Alan Dershowitz III carefully hands off the ball to Peyton Manning III, and his guards are doing a great job standing just in the way of defense, making it, you know, kind of rude to push past them.
Defensive lineman Riddick Cowlane is trying to get in there. He's saying, excuse me. He's saying he's got a sick kid with him and he's got to get through. I don't know if he's allowed to lie like that.
You know what? I've had it.
What? It's the middle of the play. Look at the intense way they're kind of strolling around out there. This game, legally, could not get any more exciting.
It isn't football if people aren't killing each other. There's no point to this.
Now Manning has stopped in the middle of the field. He's taking out his cell phone. I think he's checking his messages.
Look! I don't care if these guys get hurt. I never cared. It doesn't matter what kind of demented punch drunks they become once I'm not looking at them anymore. Does that make me a bad person? Fine, I'm a bad person, but I can't take this.
No, he wasn't checking messages. He was tweeting. It's on my feed. He says, one small step for Manning, one giant step for the Giants. That's clever.
Somebody on that field is going to get hurt. If I have to do it myself, I'm going down there with a machete and a bag of infected blood. I'll kill a fan if that's the best I can do.
And someone is delivering a fruit basket onto the field.
The Final Edition presents Great Moments in American History. We take you to Henry Kissinger Being Naughty, 1973.
Oh, Mr. President, Mr. President.
What is it, Henry? What is it?
I just blew a meaty in Brezhnev's face.
A meaty? What the hell is a meaty, Henry?
I cut the cheese, Mr. President. I blew a fart in Brezhnev's face.
Oh, you didn't, Henry.
I did, Mr. President.
Oh, you scoundrel, Henry. You rapscallion.
I did it, Mr. President. He made such a face.
Oh, Henry.
And I blamed it on Ho Chi Minh, and he wasn't even there, Mr. President.
Oh, Henry, you vagabond. That's a new way to thaw the Cold War.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you.
Oh, there you go again.
A legendary film classic is rebooted for our current political climate. When Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic space shuttle mistakenly travels thousands of years into the future, one passenger, played by Charlie Sheen, discovers he's on Planet of the Libs.
What's going on here? This can't be. A whole society that gives out entitlements?
This is the one I was telling you about. Look, he can talk.
I don't believe it. You know conservatives can't talk.
Who are you people?
C-Zera?
Oh, he's just mimicking. Right-wingers can do that, you know? They can't think.
Hey, I'm not a right-winger.
How can he answer you if he's just mimicking?
I'm not a conservative. I'm a drug-addicted celebrity.
They're the worst kind.
Are you two sisters?
I should say not.
We're married?
Of course. Why didn't I realize? Wow. Gay marriage turned out to last after all.
What's this gay marriage the alien is talking about?
I'm just differentiating it from heterosexual marriage.
Shh. Don't let anyone hear you say that. It's illegal, you know.
Here comes Dr. Cruzes.
Well, is this the little far-right extremist you were telling me about?
I'm telling you, he can talk.
Now, Cornelia, you know that right-wingers are wild animals. They can't process anything through their primitive brains. Most respected scientists believe they have fecal matter for brains.
I'm telling you, this conservative is different.
What is going on here? What kind of twisted, healthy society is this?
Why, my atavistic moron. This is a society where anyone can get an abortion and where all of us listen to NPR.
Do you all watch The Newsroom on HBO?
No, that would be extra.
This can't be a whole planet of liberals. Who interferes with democracy? Who denies global warming? Who replaces Julie Andrews with Carrie Underwood in The Sound of Music?
Ah! Now you've gotten too far, righty.
I'm afraid he's going to lib-otomize you.
You mean?
Yes. He's shutting down your access to Rush Limbaugh.
Not Rush! I mean, I'm not a conservative, but I need to be entertained.
Too late! Now come here.
Get your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty lib!
For the final edition radio hour, Will Durst here with a few choice words concerning my annual descent into password hell. As the new year approaches, a lot of us are taking our cues from the IT experts who encourage the general populace to change passwords once a year, like smoke alarms or high school girlfriends. Meaning now is when the brain racking begins to come up with a new password for 2014. We've all seen the little bar that rates our passwords in relation to strength. Red means weak. Don't you love being called weak by a snotty algorithm? And no matter how many times you respond, oh yeah, well you're pedantic, it doesn't help. The stronger the password, the greener the bar. Of course, they keep adding new rules. Now your password can't be any password you've ever used before, and it has to have capital letters and non-consecutive numerals and at least 6 characters, well, no more than 12, and it can't be 123456 7 or the word password or eat poo and die, because some sites have a filter for that. And yeah, we know the best password doesn't mean anything. It's just a random series of numbers, letters, hashtags, asterisks, and ampersands. And looks like Popeye's dialogue balloon after hitting his thumb with a hammer, which means you got not chance one in hell to remember it. Then there's always the password retrieval question, which never appears familiar, giving rise to the distinct possibility that drunken site registration may have occurred. My favorite pet? Who can make that kind of judgment? My daughter's middle name? I don't have a daughter that I know of. My favorite non-cruciferous vegetable? The hell does that mean? You can always use a password protection app, but those seem dodgy as well. Like those subliminal tapes we used to play during sleep cycles. My biggest fear was always the subliminal message was, buy more tapes. For the final edition radio hour, I'm Will Durst.
The final edition presents Great Moments in American History. We take you to 1852, the Millard Fillmore Crisis.
Congress, please quiet down. As your president of these United States, I present before you one question. Why don't you like me?
Who are you?
I'm Millard. Millard Fillmore, the president of these United States.
I thought that was Zach Taylor.
No! He's dead. It's me now. Millard Fillmore. President Millard Fillmore.
Hey, why don't you have a guy with you? What are they called? Vice President.
I don't have one.
How can we possibly take you seriously when you don't have a guy?
Yeah, we definitely need to make sure all United States presidents have a guy.
Yes, let it be known, all presidents need to have a guy. You know, a vice president. Even what's-his-name should have a guy.
It's Millard. President Millard Fillmore.
No. This guy sucks. We need a new one.
Oh, why? Why don't you like me?
Because you don't have a cool hat and beard.
Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Jesus said, "The poor you have always with you." Does this mean he wants us to ignore the poor? No. The maker of all things intends for us to care for the taker of all things. Mr. or Ms. Poor Person. And this Christmas season, we intend to do just that.
Congressman Paul Ryan's House speech today underlines that post-election, even the Tea Party is looking for ways to appear compassionate towards widows, orphans, beggars, and other moochers, even as they're voting to end food stamps, Medicare, public education, and subsidized housing, which, with the fiscal cliff looming, they'll be doing slap-bang in the middle of Christmas. House Speaker John Boehner.
Well, friends, is there anything more heartbreaking for Christmas shoppers than seeing little poor children outside the store pressing their little brown noses against the windows and gazing forlornly at gifts and goodies their parent can't possibly afford? Well, this year, let's give them a truly Christian Christmas present by making their Christmas 3 weeks later.
House Bill H.R. 115 would establish January 15th as Poor Christmas, a separate but equal holiday for the 47 million Americans living below the poverty line. Hal Weevil is a spokesman for the Walton Family Poor Christmas Initiative, which funds a nationwide grassroots campaign to sell Poor Christmas to the poor and to retailers.
The post-Christmas period sucks for retailers. They're stuck with overstocked, damaged, returned Christmas items. They discount this stuff 60%, 70%. If it's perishable, like, egg dog, or fruitcake, or poinsettias, up to 90%. Now, with Poor Christmas, the poor have a reason to buy them at affordable prices. Instead of eating the cost of unsellable seasonal items, retailers have a second Christmas buying season. Everybody's happy. The economy spikes. Paul Ryan is a genius.
The House also passed a Sense of Congress rider calling on local sanitation departments to repurpose discarded Christmas trees with enough remaining branches to support ornaments.
Look, I grew up poor. I know how hard it can be when you've had no Christmas, and you see those trees just lying discarded in the snow on the street. So spray them with pine green paint. Sell them right from sanitation trucks, at cost, or a little above. That's up to local government. Let's give the poor back their dignity.
The Walton family is working to spread the good word with the Reverend John Hagee of the First Church of Christ the Consumer in Houston. Reverend?
The key to establishing Poor Christmas is selling it to the unpoor, our congregation. How do the unpoor benefit? Simple. They won't suffer the inconvenience of having caregivers, cleaning ladies, pool boys, cooks and drivers taken off the very same holy days they do. Days when they need to be free to meditate on the true meaning of Christmas. When they need to celebrate by consuming mountains of food and costly presents as Christ intended. And now, Rosa, Jose, Venetia, and Anthony will be happy to work Christmas Day instead of getting fired, because they have poor Christmas to look forward to. Plus, they wouldn't be working poor Christmas anyway, because by January 15th, the unpoor will all be in Palm Beach, or Gastaud, or Vail, or Aruba. Everybody wins, and baby Jesus loves winners.
H.R. 115 passed by a vote of 430-5. The only holdouts were the Northern California Democratic Caucus, who claimed the term poor Christmas is demeaning to the disadvantaged. They suggest calling the new holiday Christmas the Sequel, or Christmas 2.0. Let's let Congressman Ryan, prime architect of the new holiday, have the last word.
Well, Sean, imagine poor Christmas Eve. The sparkling eyes of little poor children as they string their bright green needle-free poor Christmas trees with lightly dinged and dented ornaments, hang up their water-damaged stockings beside their narrow beds, and lay the one-legged bambino in the creche that's missing its St. Joseph, as so many poor families do. So the Savior is born a little later for the poor. He's still our same blessed Savior. Merry poor Christmas to one and all.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh, o'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what
The Final Edition presents Great Moments in American History. We take you to President James Buchanan in the Oval Office, 1858.
Mr. President, the South is not pleased.
Nope.
They are threatening to secede.
Yep.
So, are you going to do anything about the slave issue?
Nope.
But this issue could tear our new country apart.
Yep.
So what are you planning on doing?
Get naked, sit on this rug, and eat these new potato chips.
Good God!
Bring me the dipping sauce.
Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen, when the snow lay round.
Welcome, one and all, to another meeting of Alcoholists Unanimous. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Christmas is upon us again, and all those friends, family members, and media quacks who have a rabid, irrational prejudice against alcohol will be on us too.
Okay.
Why don't we share some of the prudes, killjoys, blue noses, and guilt trippers who'll try to make the upcoming holiday season utterly miserable.
My name is Prudence, and I'm an alcoholist.
Hello, Prudence!
My mother is descended from pilgrims, and she's a selectman of a Boston town that's still dry. She says children should never even learn about alcohol, let alone see people drinking it. She takes sadistic pleasure in saying to guests, "Oh, we don't serve alcohol in this house, but I do have cocoa water."
Oh, please.
That's terrible.
Hello, my name is Groovy Morning, and I'm an alcoholist.
Hello, Groovy Morning.
My uncle, Righteous Sunflower, never forgot getting high at Woodstock. This is a guy who's been reduced to drooling cretinism by a lifetime of marijuana use, but he tells me, "Hey, man, fucking juicing kills your brain cells, man."
Oh, I hate that guy.
That sounds awful.
My name is Sarah Jessica, and I'm an alcoholist.
Hello, Sarah Jessica.
My dad is a doctor who claims alcohol is the main cause of cancer, and even being around drinkers is dangerous because of secondary fumes. At parties, he's always saying stuff to people who are partying down, like, "I hope you're getting regular mammograms."
Boom. Hate that guy, too.
Hey, my name is Miles, and I'm an alcoholist.
Hello, Miles.
My cousin Chloe is a campus activist at Brown who's campaigning to get alcohol banned everywhere on Earth. She says alcohol makes men misogynistic, homicidal animals, and in an alcohol-free world, there'd be a 90% reduction in violent crime, war, famine, global warming, and death in general? And that women who drink doom themselves to being victims of misogynistic, homicidal male rapists? And the faculty's terrified of her, and...
Okay, okay, Miles, Miles. We have met Chloe, and she is the enemy. Let's have a moment of reflection now, and then recite together the 12 steps of guiltless pleasure.
We admitted the power of alcohol.
That it made our lives
about 100 times more pleasant than without. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves had provided the means, one day at a time, to restore our sanity. Made a decision to thank that power, whoever she or he may be, for this, that while life is decay, decay produces the substance that keeps decay at bay. Made a moral inventory of what God might find wrong in billions of hard-working humans over thousands of years, finding solace in a glass or two of fermented fruit.
Admitted to God, ourselves, and the bartender the exact nature of our next cocktail.
Oh. Yeah.
Humbly asked God to remove the enemies of pleasure from our plate, our glass, and our face.
Yeah.
Made a list of all persons harmed down the years by those who consider themselves morally cleansed and gave up because it was far too long.
Made amends to such persons wherever possible by sharing with them a bottle, no, two, of God's greatest earthly gift.
Made a list of all the benefits bestowed by alcohol on the arts, cultures, and economies of history's great civilizations and gave up because it was even longer than the one in Step 7.
Yes. Sought to improve contact with the power that forms the bubbles in the yeast, seeking to know her or his will for what to drink with the poached salmon.
Bravo.
Having had a spiritual awakening... As a result of these 12 steps, we vow to carry this message to alcoholists everywhere, shamed and intimidated by prigs, prudes, busybodies, and scaremongers, and to practice them every day, but especially at Christmas dinner.
Bring me flesh and bring me wine. Bring me pine logs hither. Thou and I will see him dine when we bear them thither. Page and monarch, forth they went together.
The final edition presents Great Moments in American History. We take you to the Oval Office, 1962.
Bobby, get the jelly and the oils, or we only have 20 minutes until Jackie gets back.
Right, Jack.
Teddy, we need you, or on lookout.
Not again, Jack. I'm always on lookout. I never get to spread the jelly.
Ask not what this quickie can do for you, but what you can do for this quickie.
All right, Jack, I'll do it. But next time, I get to watch.
Fair enough, Teddy. But keep in mind, the next time we do this, Fidel Castro's coming.
This episode of the Final Edition Radio Hour was performed by Barry Lank, John Marshall, Rob Gordon, Jen Dodd, Meredith Marshall, Kevin Janis, Jeff Chrysler, and Tony Hendra. It was written by Barry Lank, John Marshall, Rob Gordon, and Tony Hendra. Special thanks to Will Durst for his commentary, Password in Hell. For more from Will, visit his website, willdurst.com. And while you're browsing the net, of course, you'll go to thefinaledition.com. Right? Eh? You can get more sizzling satire with teeth there and info on how you can purchase our very first album, The Vinyl Edition. It makes a great stocking stuffer, despite the fact it's digital and there's really nothing to stuff a stocking with. The Final Edition Radio Hour was produced by Jeff Chrysler and Tony Hendra, engineered by Melissa Gerson, and edited by Greg Russ. The Final Edition Radio Hour is a production of The Final Edition, LLC, copyright 2013.